America.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from our hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, or out across the world if you want to call us at 831-464-8295, but please hold your calls. We have with us a Jim Poplova and Poplova, you pronounce it for me, Jim.
Poplova.
And he is a financial consultant. He had written something on the perfect financial storm, talking about the various problems that we face today economically. And, of course, we've had him on before, but I thought we'd have him on again because now, of course, we're hearing, well, gee, things are really looking a lot better. Mr. Greenspan has said that, oh, we may very well have turned the corner, or he sort of couches this in strange terms, so you're not quite certain what he's doing, but he's not lowering the interest rates, but he's not raising the interest rates either. And then we keep getting all of these reports like, you know, IBM is down 135% as far as its sales or income this year, but of course this is really great. Now they're beginning to consolidate, and you know, how you can be really great when you're down 35%, I don't know. And I have a feeling they're playing games with our minds. What's really going on, Jim?
I think so much of the financial markets depends on perception rather than reality. And so much or so often you hear in the news that this company or that company beat expectations. And so the news on the surface appears that things are getting better. Obviously, if somebody beat expectations, that's better than not beating expectations. But the problem is, Doctor, the standards have been lowered so low that it's not hard for these companies to beat expectations. And what is not disclosed so often when these reports are made is that a company's sales, like in the case of IBM, or, you know, you can take Xerox or General Motors or anybody else, their profits are down, their sales are down. The fact that they beat expectations is, you know, a very easy feat today. So on the surface, all appears well because things are going better than expected, when in reality, if we make a comparison to where they were, let's say, a year ago, things are actually worse than expected. And that a good example of that was today, where AOL announced a $54 billion loss for last year, and most of that is, quite honestly, a paper loss. They issued shares to buy a company called Time Warner. By writing off $54 billion in goodwill, the management of the company was acknowledging that they made a mistake to their shareholders. In other words, the shares that they issued to buy AOL have proved to be less than what they were actually worth at the time of the purchase. And so this is the kind of nonsense that goes and passes for analysis in the financial markets today that I think that is leading investors down a very dangerous path that could destroy much of their net worth.
Well, now, what about Ford? Ford doesn't seem to be doing very well. Are they talking about a $500 million loss, or is it more than that?
It could be actually more than that because they're going to be going through a lot more restructuring. They're going to be closing down plants. This was a company that expanded, bought a lot of different car companies. They bought Volvo. They bought Jaguar. They expanded. They added debt. They bought back their stock. And unfortunately, you know, auto sales are very competitive today. And in order to make a sale, companies often have to offer what GM is doing, which is 0% financing. And in this kind of environment, 0% financing, rebates, discounts are cutting profit margins, which are cutting profits. And when those profits disappear, the company doesn't have the wherewithal to meet or pay down its interest payments.
Well, my understanding is that an awful lot of our major corporations have more debt than they have equity. Is that a fair assessment or not?
No, that's a remarkable hallmark of the boom years of the, let's say, latter part of the last century, in fact, the 90s, is that companies and individuals embarked on a spending and borrowing spree. In the case of consumers, they were borrowing to go, you know, to make consumer purchases from, you know, whether it was buying big screen TVs or larger homes. In the case of corporations, they were borrowing money to make acquisitions, to buy other companies, or to buy back their own stock in an effort to drive up earnings per share and ultimately their stock price.
All right, fine. Well, then, what do you think is going to happen? Because I know nobody can really tell what's going to happen, but it looks to me like we're in a pretty shaky position. I understand that down in Argentina now, they've just closed the banks down altogether. What do you do? I mean, if all your money is in the bank and they've closed your bank, you know, what do you do?
Well, unfortunately, the middle class in Argentina have virtually been wiped out because several months ago, the government limited access to savings and only would allow them to withdraw $500 a month. Then over this weekend, the government actually closed down the banks. They're still closed as you and I speak. The foreign exchange markets have been shut down as well as the stock exchange. And so for many Argentines, their wealth or their life savings have been wiped out through government fiat inflating the currency.
I know when I lived in South Africa in the mid-1970s why the rand was worth more than the dollar. Now it's worth less than 10 cents on the dollar. And all those people in Africa who saved their money and did the right thing, as we think, you know, saving, frugal, they ended up, of course, being totally wiped out.
Well, this is what's happened to Argentina. We've seen it happen into Asia. When governments print money, when they spend more that they have, that they're taking in from tax revenues, another way to get more money is to inflate the currency. And eventually those chickens come home to roost. We've seen it over and over again, whether it's Argentina, Germany in the 20s, Germany in the 40s. We saw it in Asian countries, Latin American countries, Mexico. The same story is repeated over and over again.
We're going to have to interrupt you there because we have to tell our listeners here that if you'd like to help us so that we can continue bringing you such good news, why? But at least you're going to hear what I think is true, and we try to get you top-notch people to tell you what's really going on. One of the things that you could do to help us so that we can continue doing what we do 5 hours a day would be to change your long-distance carrier. If it's not you're not already with a Christian carrier, why, give serious consideration to going to Promise Vision. You do that by calling 866-448-5631. That's 866-448-5631. And just change over your long-distance carrier. Won't cost you anything. The costs are competitive, but 15% of whatever your long-distance charges are will revert back to us. They're an honest company, and I have no hesitation at all in recommending Promise Vision for your long-distance carrier. Again, the number 866-448-5631. And then I want to mention, of course, if you have children or grandchildren, or maybe you have difficulty reading, of course, if your children or grandchildren are in government schools, they're not being taught to read phonetically, or if they're mixing phonics and sight reading, that's even going to confuse them all the more. But phonopoly will actually begin to change and reprogram a child's mind and undo all the harm that has intentionally been done by the educate cats who really want to dumb down our children. So if you'd like to help them get a phonopoly game, it's five different board games where the children learn the sounds and the rules, and in 16 to 20 hours, you play along with them, having fun playing Monopoly. Why, of course, you can retrain their minds. Call 1-800-544-8927, the game Monopoly. Well, let me tell you about some of the four tape sets we have. One special tape set is the Tuskegee Study, and it's four interviews with people who were involved with the Tuskegee Study, or at least who've gone into the background of this really most horrible of all American experimentation. We had the unique opportunity to interview a number of the men who were involved in analyzing the Tuskegee Study, a government-sponsored study where 400 black men were recruited, and they had syphilis, and of course, what they did not understand is that they were not being recruited to be treated, they were being recruited not to be treated, and the government agents did everything they could to block those men from receiving treatment for their syphilis. Call today at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's important that you understand that study so you can better understand the mentality of the men who are working behind the scenes in America today. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon is Jim Kaplava, and we're talking about, of course, what's happening economically. Jim is a financial advisor. Do you have a telephone number or website you'd like to get out there?
Sure. We have a toll-free number, which is 888-486-3939, and our website is financialsense.com, financialsense being all one word.
And you're still working with my good friend John Leffler?
Yes, he helps me with my radio program.
Okay, fine. Well, now, what have the American people done with all the money? Because some of them did very, very well. They got out of the stock market when it was up around 11,000. And did they invest in bonds? Did they put their money in time deposits? What have they done, and how much money is there really sitting around here in the United States at the present time? Do we have any idea?
Well, we know that a good majority of the money that went into the stock market really came into the stock market after 1995, because that's where the bulk of the mutual fund assets really began to take off. And a good majority of that money still remains in the market today, although there is, it's estimated, several trillion dollars that are sitting on the sidelines in money market funds. But for the majority of most people, whether they have their money in individual stock mutual funds or mutual funds through their 401k programs, they are still invested in the market. So the one thing that has not happened and that we have not seen, and this is normally something you do not see until the second phase of the bear market, is what we call investor capitulation. That's when, you know, after, let's say, this year, if we have another year of losses, people just simply give up and they say, you know what, I'm tired, I've lost enough money, I want out, I want my money, and they start selling. And that's usually when you see the largest decline take place in a bear market. This is something up until this point we have yet to see.
And so when that happens, then the market prices really begin to drop.
That's where I think you see the real exodus from the market. I think what happened after March of the year 2000, most of the exodus out of the stock market was felt in the NASDAQ. That's where all the technology and the internet companies were located, and that's where investors were putting their money. That's where you made a lot of big money, you know, the Amazons, the AOLs, and companies like that. But what happened is the markets began to crater, particularly the NASDAQ, in the first quarter of 2000. I think a lot of that money went over into the housing market. The interest rates came down. The Fed cut interest rates 11% last year. And so the bubble in the stock market just simply jumped onto another bubble called the real estate market, which continues to this day.
In other words, you don't think that this is a good time to go into real estate?
I wouldn't be getting in at this point because I think the prices are overinflated. There was a story running barren several weeks ago. And one of the analysts in the real estate market used an indicator, which is personal income related to mortgage debt. And in the last recession, this indicator got up to 1.59. Today it's at 1.62, meaning that our ability to carry mortgages is much less today because we have more debt. And his prediction was that the mortgage or the housing market would peak within the next quarter, and I think you're starting to see that because today the Commerce Department There was a report on housing starts. New home sales fell by 3.1%. So I think you're already beginning to see some signs of that, in particular in the what I call the luxury market, the high end of the market. And I think eventually this, you know, works its way down to the rest of the market.
All right, fine. So basically what we're seeing is really the stock market is not a good place to be. The housing market isn't a good place to be. What about the precious metals? Gold is up just a little bit. Silver is not doing much of anything. What about we hear about the Japanese buying a lot of gold? Certainly that hasn't happened here in America, at least not to the extent it's happening in Japan. Is this going to have any impact on this totally manipulated market? Because isn't the gold market totally manipulated by the central banks?
Well, central banks have in their interest, the suppression of gold prices, because gold is a barometer of fear or trust in the financial system. What we've seen, and this is probably one of the untold stories of 2001 and this year, is the rise in gold and silver stocks. Last year, the gold and silver stocks were the best performing sector within the market. The Amex Gold Index is up nearly 100% over the last 52 weeks, and it's up 60% this year alone. So I think the rise in gold and silver equities is signaling the upcoming bull market in gold and silver bullion. And it's very hard, I'm sure, for many listeners, after seeing gold prices languish in, for nearly two decades, to think that the markets would ever change. But what we do know historically is that over periods of time, we go from bull and bear markets. The stock bull market turns into a bear market, and another bull market in another asset class, this time being gold and silver, takes its place. This is what we saw, for example, beginning in the bull market in the 50s that lasted all the way to the midpoint of the 60s. People made a lot of money in stocks, but from mid-60s to almost the beginning of the 80s, the next big thing in the financial markets really weren't stocks or bonds. It was investments in commodities such as gold, silver, oil, grains, basic raw materials, and I think that's what's in front of us.
You really think then that we'll see the commodities rising up?
I really do. We've already seen it in bullion prices. Gold prices have gone from a low of about 250. They're over 300 now. Silver is still sort of in a narrow trading range, but we've seen oil prices move up. And I believe you're going to see the next movement will be in raw materials. There's a gentleman by the name of Jim Rogers, who many I'm sure are familiar with, was a partner to George Soros in the late 60s and 70s. He just came back from a world tour that took almost 3 years, and he's firmly convinced that raw materials are going to be the next big thing for the markets.
Did he take a world trip, 10 years or so, 15 years ago?
Yeah, he did one at the beginning of the 90s. He was gone for 2 years, and the result of that trip was he wrote a book called Investment Biker.
Yeah, that's right. He was on a motorcycle, as I remember.
Yeah, this time he went on a two-seater Mercedes.
All right. Well, he's getting up in the world. This is a multimillionaire, but apparently he's a very, very astute observer, and he really feels then that we're going to begin to see the prices of raw materials and the commodities going up.
Yeah, and it can be explained by two phenomena. One is population growth worldwide. You know, we tend to think of population growth rates here in the United States, which are fueled by, let's say, immigration. But in countries such as India and the Third World and in China, where the population growth is still expanding, that drives demand for basic goods and services. And the first thing is your material well-being increases. You know, you want a better diet. You might want to change your bicycle to a scooter that runs on gasoline. But you try to improve your basic living standards, which is a demand or creates a demand for raw materials. And the other aspect that could drive this market is that low prices in commodities, whether that's oil, gold, silver, grains, what that does is it drives the weaker players out of the business, And so you see consolidation within an industry, as we've seen in the oil industry, one oil company buying another oil company, one gold company buying another gold company. And what happens is the industry contracts, which eventually reduces the supply, which eventually creates higher prices.
Well, I can remember back in the late 60s when copper was, you know, $3 a pound. And, you know, for years it's been a 75, 85 cents, 65 cents. I mean, the copper-producing companies are just bleeding. These countries, you know, have a hard time paying their laborers, and the laborers are impoverished. And, of course, these are usually the third world countries, which are the big copper producers. And certainly the price has been kept down for so many years. Are there any shortages of these, or is there still a tremendous, oversupply?
Well, we do know this, that most of the things that we consume, such as oil, is the oil that we are consuming today was based on oil that was found over 25 years ago. So we're running off our feedstocks of most major commodities that are supplementing the deficits. Gold is running a deficit. Silver is running a deficit. Oil today, we are depleting at a very rapid pace our oil reserves. In fact, in the next couple of years, the production of oil in the Western world will cross over and OPEC will begin to exceed it. And so it was these large feedstocks that were built up in the first part of the century on deposits found many, many years ago that we're drawing down now that I think is going to eventually lead to shortages.
All right. And, of course, then once you really have a legitimate shortage, then the price will go up and you'll really have the market working rather than, of course, it seems that we've just had a conscious effort to keep these prices down. We're going to have to just take another break here. And certainly this is the point when I want to mention to our listeners that we're carrying the Miracle 2 soap products just because we think it's an excellent soap product. And some of our listeners certainly seem to think it's helped their rashes or many of the certainly skin problems they've had. And because we've had such good results with it, with ourselves and with our friends, why we're offering it to you, and it's a soap and a moisturizing soap and a neutralizer and a gel and a lotion, and you can get samples of all of them, or you can actually, if you'd like information, why we'd be glad to send it to you free of charge. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd either like to buy an introductory set of the Miracle 2 soap products, or, of course, if you'd like to simply get more information, we'll get it for you. Again, the number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then let me suggest some of the items we have. If you've never seen or heard our 4-tape set on the Bohemian Grove, let me suggest that. If you wonder what the Office of Homeland Security is all about, they're going to invest $38 billion, that is B, billion dollars, for Homeland Security. What this is really all about, and why was this all planned long before September 11th of last year? What is the Medical Emergency Health Powers Act, and why are they so interested in forcing people to be vaccinated? Well, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Ask for our 4-tape set on the Office of Homeland Security. If you'd like to read their first Phase 1 report, that's the Office of Homeland Security packet, and it comes with 2 tapes or with a video of the special, call 1-800-544-8927. Get the information that will help you to understand what's going on today. Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, the Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught into a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, the Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, the Rules of Engagement, is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and guest this afternoon is Jim Popovla, and he, of course, is a financial analyst. I can remember, I guess it was either 79 or 80, when the commodities took that great, great, great jump. And it didn't seem to matter what you was in. It was sort of like the stock market for the last few years. You could invest in almost anything, and it went up. And the same thing happened with commodities. Now, let me mention to our listeners, do not get into commodities. Commodities is a great way to make a small fortune out of a large fortune. And in my estimation, unless you are a real professional, you don't want to get into that. What are your thoughts on that, Jim?
I basically agree with you. I mean, the commodity markets are a very sophisticated market. It's very crucial. Most people invest in commodities through the futures market, where they do so on leverage. You put 10% down. And the amount of sophistication, not only understanding technical analysis, but understanding the fundamentals of the market that drive commodity prices is quite extensive. And so for most people, that kind of investment vehicle is really not appropriate because it takes a high degree of sophistication.
And you get to the point you can't sleep at night. You can't think it becomes an obsession. There are two things that destroy you, greed and fear. And this is something that you have to have nerves of steel to be involved in, and I certainly don't recommend anybody. But how can our listeners out there at least prepare themselves for what's coming ahead, and is there any way they can profit from it?
Well, I like investments in raw materials, but as you and I just spoke, trying to invest directly in the raw materials market in basic commodities requires a high degree of sophistication. But however, an alternative to that would be to invest in the companies that make their living through commodities. For example, well-financed, well-capitalized oil companies, mining companies, or, you know, they can buy silver or gold bullion itself. You can buy silver at a very inexpensive rate. I think there's 10-ounce bars, 100-ounce bars, etc., where you can actually buy the physical bullion. And in this case, you're not actually speculating. You're not buying something on margin. You're buying something that is real that you can hold on to. So either buying things or investing in silver and gold bullion, or investing in companies that produce the commodities, the producers themselves, such as the oil companies, the natural gas companies, or unhedged mining companies, is a way, I think, to play this market.
Well, you know, I can remember Homestead gold stock, Homestead Mining. I mean, that was the Cadillac of gold stocks. And wasn't that just bought out here recently? It's no more. Homestock is no more. Homestead.
Yeah, Homestead was bought out by Barrick Gold last year.
And they're really buying about everything, aren't they?
Well, the large companies, the large producers, and this gets back to what has happened to the commodities market. It is more profitable for a large company such as Barrick to go out and buy another mining company than it is to go out and spend their own money and try to go and explore and find new deposits of gold and silver. The same thing has taken place in the oil market. And Homestake is an interesting example because, for example, during the Great Depression, when the price of stocks represented by the Dow Industrials had fallen 90%, a $10,000 investment in Homestake Mining, you would have received nearly four times that back in dividends throughout the Depression. And by the end of the 30s, your investment in Homestake would have been worth about seven times more than what you paid for it.
And of course, Barrick has really been keeping the price of gold down artificially, hasn't it? Simply by its trading and futures selling at a lower price, so that in many ways, hasn't that really destroyed their competition pretty effectively?
Well, they've kept a lid on the price. I mean, some people would argue that it's been very effective because Barrick has earned a profit during this bear market in gold. But what Barrick has done now is they have sold, it is estimated, between 5 and 8 years of their production. So if gold prices were to rise in a precipitous manner, as they did in, let's say, the latter part of the 70s, Barrick would not participate in the rise in gold. So if I was to invest in a gold company, Barrick would be one company that I would avoid.
Now, what about Agnico Eagle, or is that even still around?
Agnico Eagle is an excellent company and has done quite well beginning last year. I think that stock has more than doubled already. Yeah, they're still around. They're an unhedged mining company and highly recommended.
All right, fine. Well, we've got Dave calling from Big Sur, and Dave at one time was a stockbroker himself, and now he's living the good life down at Big Sur. Hi, Dave. I haven't heard from you in many months.
Well, I'm doing pretty good, thank you.
Are you still listening on a regular basis?
Yes, I am.
All right, fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I found this a very interesting discussion because, you know, I've invested in some gold stocks and so forth, and the thing on Barrick Gold and our future sales to protect them against lower prices, that was hurting them when gold was going up. So that's why they acquired Homestake Mine, because Homestake Mine was an unhedged producer. And this is going to improve their position somewhat. And then also, I just noticed in this morning's Wall Street Journal, they announced a huge gold find down in Peru, one of the biggest gold finds of the last decade, according to the paper.
Now, is that Barrick or is that Homestake?
That's Barrick, but Barrick now owns Homestake.
All right, fine.
So anyway, I just wanted to mention that, and also I do feel that those gold stocks, as your guest is suggesting, as producers of the commodity, might still be a pretty good investment. One of the quietest or least publicized things that's happening right now is with Kinross Gold, which is on the American Stock Exchange, and it's one of the most active stocks on the entire exchange, and it's just about doubled in the past 6 months, and they are a unhedged, highly leveraged gold company, so just the opposite of Barrick Gold.
All right, fine.
I wonder what your guests might think about that.
What do you think about Dave is saying?
I agree with his assumption on why Barrick bought Homestake, because they needed to cover their hedges, and this discovery announced in the Wall Street Journal certainly helps, but it's going to be 5 to 6 years before that mine can be brought into production. Companies like Kinross Mining, companies that are currently unhedged, I think are going to represent the better returns for investors if you expect the price of gold to rise.
Well, now, what about silver? You know, I can remember when Sunshine Mine was sort of the Cadillac of gold mines, Hecla, and most of these are simply remembrance of things past, and yet isn't there going to be a very definite shortage of silver here in the next couple of years?
I see silver as being more explosive to the upside than gold, because unlike gold, where there are large deposits held in the vaults of central banks, we don't have a large above-ground supply of silver. I mean, it's CPM Group, I think they have projected that there's about 500 million ounces of silver reserves in the world today, and that's just a broad estimate. Nobody really knows for sure.
Well, what 500 million ounces, how long would that last? I mean, how much do we actually use every year?
Well, that represents about 1 year's worth of production.
Okay, fine.
Dr. Stan,
yes.
One last question, please.
Okay, fine.
What stock would your guest recommend as a silver play?
Okay, thanks so much,
thanks
Dave.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. David asked, and Dave, I know, was a stockbroker for many years, is there a good silver stock if silver is going to go?
My favorite among the silvers, there's really two companies, but the favorite would be Silver Standard. They are a junior mining company. They are not actually producing silver. The goal of the company management is to go and acquire silver-producing properties, or properties that have the potential for silver, and keep those reserves sort of in the bank, in the ground, because really at today's price of silver at around $450, $460 an ounce, it is uneconomical to mine silver at today's cost. In other words, these companies can't make a profit. And so the management of the company is going around the world, acquiring properties on different continents and acquiring silver reserves, and they're going to hold those reserves until such time that silver prices move up dramatically, where it becomes more profitable to actually mine the metal. But in the meantime, they are acquiring vast amounts of silver reserves, which they're able to do so today because the prices are so cheap.
All right, that sounds like an excellent play. You said there were two stocks?
Yeah, the other company would be Pan American Silver. They are actually producing silver at this point. They're producing roughly about 12 million ounces of silver a year, and that will increase this year. There are very few pure silver mining companies because about 80% of silver production is a byproduct of other forms of mining such as lead, gold, or zinc, or other types of base metal mining.
All right, fine. So that would be pretty much what you would suggest, those two silver mines. Whatever happened to Sunshine Mines?
Well, they're still around. I mean, they're on life support, but companies like Sunshine, Hecla, are in very poor shape because of the amount of debt that they took on. And so, you know, I'm not as favorably disposed towards those companies because of the leverage on the books.
And, of course, debt is the one thing that really is going to pull down an awful lot of companies right now, don't you think? I mean, it looks to me like the American public is overextended in debt. Many of our major corporations are overextended in debt. And isn't that sort of like a big millstone around the future of our economy?
Well, I think it's one reason why you're seeing such an anemic recovery, if this is even to be called a recovery, because eventually you arrive at that point, whether you're a corporation or an individual, where, you know, you're maxed out. There's no more amount of new debt that you can take on, or you reach a point where lenders are just simply unwilling to give you more money. And that's already happened in the corporate market, where many blue-chip corporations have seen their credit ratings lowered and are unable to tap what is called the commercial paper market, where they can borrow short-term at very low interest rates. Because of their heavy debt loads, they are now forced to go and borrow long-term at much higher interest rate cost, which is one reason why their profits have hurt.
And, of course, this is the big problem, you know. I see Mazda now. You can buy a Mazda car, nothing down, and you don't have to pay until the year 2003. And where's the money coming from for this?
Well, what they're doing is they're either going out and they're factoring this out, they're financing it, or it's reflected in the cost. But I think it poses a real danger. I was just remarking last night to my wife, we were watching the news, and there was a commercial for a furniture store that was advertising their furniture on sale with no payments to the year 2005.
I mean, you're sitting on a time bomb when you do that. Well, right now, of course, we just want to tell our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there listening to us across America, why, we hope many of you will decide you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and for a suggested gift of at least $20 a month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, plus you'll get our four best tapes of the month. Now, you can simply subscribe to our newsletter for $25 a year, and we simply give you an appraisal of what's going on in the world and the information you're not going to get elsewhere, and really a basic understanding of what is taking place. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and quite frankly, we need your help so that we can continue doing what we're doing, and that is reaching out across America 5 hours every day on shortwave, on the internet, on satellite, and with major radio stations across America. But we have to pay for our time, and we have to pay for what we do, and believe me, those bills come in every month. So if you'd like to become part of our team, you'll wonder what you can do. Well, you can help us. And then, of course, we want you to tell other people about our programs. We want you to tell other people, you know, certainly about our website, which is radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And, of course, we encourage you to pull down our letters and copy them, to copy our videotapes, to copy our audio tapes, and help us to get the word out across America. Again, the number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America truly is at war today. We're involved in an epic struggle to determine if America will survive. another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen, or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future, are under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest today is Jim Poplava, and he's a financial consultant. Jim, would you like to get your telephone number out once again and your website?
Sure. Our toll-free telephone number is 888-486-3939, and our website is financialsense.com, with financial sense being all one word.
All right, fine. Well, if we look over and we're seeing what's happening in Japan, it sounds like their banks are just in terrible, terrible shape. And I can remember a decade ago, you know, the 10 largest banks in the world were Japanese banks. And suddenly now many of these banks are teetering on the edge of collapse, and it doesn't seem that there's anything they can do to save them. What's going to happen? I mean, Japan is the second largest economy in the world. What's going on over there, and what impact is what's going on over there going to have here in America?
Well, the greatest risk to Japan is they've been unable, or at least unwilling, to recognize that clean up their banking system of all the bad loans from the decade-long binge that these banks went on during the 80s, where you had this sort of credit bubble that was created in Japan. And the failure to recognize this problem and trying to prop it up is something that has probably kept Japan's economy from recovery. The problem that you have now is the estimated loan losses have increased over the last decade. It's estimated over $250 billion in bad credit loans. And I think this is one reason the government has moved to reduce deposit insurance in Japan. And for the average Japanese saver, not only have they seen, you know, their stock market investments decline over the last 10 years, 12 years. I mean, the Japanese Nikkei today is around 11,000. Back in 1990, it was at 39,000. Property prices have fallen. And what you're seeing in Japan is a real deflation where interest rates, prices keep declining. Interest rates are near zero. And for the average Japanese saver, they've just about given up, and so they've been taking out money out of the banking system because beginning this month, on April 1st, deposit insurance was reduced to $75,000, and a lot of that money is going into the gold market, where it's expected that Japanese demand for gold this year will create a demand exceeding over 200 tons.
Well, that, of course, could have a very, very bullish effect on the world gold market, which is the last thing that central banks want. They don't want the price of gold to go up. They want people to be dependent upon their funny money, which they create out of nothing. But, of course, that's how they have held us under their control in the past. If gold were to break loose, would they perhaps lose some of their power and control over our lives?
Well, there's always the problem that if confidence is lost in the financial system, and this is really where the battle begins, because as long as people have confidence in paper money, be it the stock market, the bond market, the currency of a country, or, you know, in bank deposits themselves, then the whole system works. It's when people start to lose confidence as a result of, you know, the Enrons, the accounting scandals, the downturn in the markets, or as they turn on their television and they see events that are taking place in Argentina and Japan, what happens is that tends to erode at confidence. And when people erode or see that confidence erode within themselves, they look for alternative investments. And I think at that point, they turn to what has been money for, or at least recognized as money for over 5,000 years, which is gold. And this is the risk that the central banks run now, but they've been able to contain it for the last two decades. It's just a question of when or how long or how much further the system will continue. I think it's gradually eroding now, which is what you're starting to see take place in the gold market.
Well, now, here in the United States, are they increasing the amount of money in circulation? Are they restricting the spigot on money expansion? Because all of this, is, of course, regulated by the central bank. They can increase money in circulation. They can decrease this. What are they doing? Are they priming the pump, or are they letting the water go back down into the well, as it were?
Well, this has probably been the largest expansion in the supply of money that we've seen in history over the last, this is just measured from October of 2000 to October of 2001. The money supply is represented by M3, increased by close to $1 trillion.
That's a trillion here, a trillion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money.
Yeah, that even by American standards, $1 trillion is a lot of money. And I think where you've seen a lot of that money go into is the credit markets, especially through mortgages, which have been a main source of consumption for many Americans. Not only are Americans taking on larger debt by buying bigger homes with bigger mortgages, but the rise in real estate values has allowed many Americans to extract extra equity out of their homes by taking out new mortgages or refinancing their existing mortgage, taking out some of that equity and spending it. It's one of the reasons why the consumer and the housing market has really held up throughout what was last year's recession.
Well, are they still doing that now? Of course, you went from October of 2000 to October of the year 2001. Are they still continuing to massively expand the M3, the other money increments?
Well, the money supply is not increasing at the same rate it was last year, but there are other ways of increasing the supply of credit outside the banking system, and that's done through alternative credit-creating vehicles such as Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. These so-called government-sponsored entities are expanding credit through the securities market, through the issuance. These agencies actually go out and raise new money in the bond markets, which enable them to expand credit through mortgages.
Well, we see these ads on television, about the father who brings home the dog, and the wife says, oh, we're not to have a dog till we get the new house, And then the husband smiles, and we got the home. And then it says Fannie Mae. So what they're doing then is making a lot of money available for homes?
Well, they're making money available for homes, but there's almost a disintermediation process that has taken place in the credit-creating system. In other words, back in the old days when you went out and got a loan for your house or you went to borrow money for a business, you sat across the desk from a banker. You sat there, he could look you in the eyes, he'd judge your character, and he sort of knew who you were and knew a lot about you, and they could make some very intelligent decisions on how credit was advanced. Today, we have so many different vehicles for creating credit. We have home equity loans. Actually, most credit is done on a scoring system where that personal touch, knowing the borrower has virtually disappeared.
And so basically they'll lend the money to just about anybody, and whether they're ever going to pay it back or not, is that what you're suggesting?
Well, what happens is during good times, bankers are a little bit more lenient in terms of how they extend credit. It used to be that, for example, if you were to go out and buy a home, a lender would require a 20% down payment. Today, lenders, I've heard of 0% down. You've got an average, though. Most homes are purchased with as little as 10% down.
Well, when foreign countries default on their loans, we just write them off. Why don't we do the same thing here?
Well, if we start doing that and writing off all the loans, I guess you've got the problem, what happens to the equity in the banks? Because if we write off these loans as being no good, obviously, let's say if the bank loaned $100,000 on a house, and that mortgage or house is no longer worth enough to cover the mortgage, then they're going to have to write down that mortgage or sell the house at whatever they can get. And that would be a loss for the bank. And, of course, that reduces the bank's net worth or their equity.
But this is what we do with foreign countries. I mean, a house is $100,000. They're talking about hundreds of millions to foreign countries. And even the president is encouraging we just sort of start writing off all these loans. What sort of madness is this?
Well, it's insanity, but in relationship of writing off some foreign loans for $1 billion here and $1 billion there compared to a $1 trillion mortgage market is something entirely different.
Oh, sure, I realize. I'm playing the devil's advocate, but I think people have to understand we're in a fiat money system, and, of course, banks create money out of nothing with a fractional reserve because all that you need is a fraction of the money to create the new money. But eventually, sometime, you get into trouble with this system, don't you?
Well, eventually you're going to have to pay the piper, which is what we're seeing taking place in Argentina today. Their government expanded the government system and government budget throughout Argentina. They continued to run deficits in each one of the provinces, and finally they got to a point where they couldn't maintain their current system, and this is where they are today, where the value of their currency has lost about two-thirds of its value against the U.S. dollar. They've got the banks frozen, the stock market closed, and you can't get your money out of the country.
Are we set up for a perfect financial storm, do you think?
In my estimation, I think that we're heading that. In fact, I'm writing a new version of what I think is going to take place. It's a continuation of what I wrote in The Perfect Financial Storm. It's a new piece that I'm going to be releasing this Friday.
Well, I hope you'll get me a copy of it, and maybe we can get you back on here, at least if not on this program, one of our others. But thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a fascinating, fascinating hour, and I'm sure our listeners out across America appreciate this as much as I have.
Well, Dr. Stan, thank you for having me on the program.
God bless you. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program. And, you know, people say, oh, well, you're just bad news. We don't like to hear bad news. Well, you're a lot better off to hear it now than, of course, end up like the people in Argentina or in Malaysia or in Japan. We are to be the watchmen, and if you read Ezekiel 3 and 33, certain people are there to warn you what lies ahead, because behind everything going on is a spiritual battle. And if you don't care about your children and your grandchildren, just ignore what we say. If you do, then join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. But whatever happens, we're in for some difficult times. The question is, will America survive as a free nation, or will it simply become a tyrannical nation, as has happened throughout all history to those nations that have turned against God? And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan saying goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.